The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The presidential election in the United States is almost upon us, but the road has been a difficult one for both the Republican and Democratic parties. My next guest is the former and short-lived director of communication for Donald Trump's White House. He's gone on to author several books, and he's now the co-host of The Rest Is Politics, the U.S. podcast. Joining me now to analyze the latest developments is Anthony Scaramucci.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm very well. First of all, I should get your reaction to the second attempt on the life of Donald Trump.
Well, I mean, listen, there's absolutely no room in a democratic process for political violence. So it's a disgusting situation. I'm very happy that President Biden, after this first attempt, obviously in July, bolstered his security team. It's a terrible situation. I don't like the call for violence. I don't think what's happening in the political discourse here in the United States is good. Mr. Trump, unfortunately, is heating people up, but nobody should be doing that. So it's an absolutely disgusting thing. I don't think any sane person could say anything other than denouncing that sort of stuff happening.
It was remarkable that the Secret Service spokesman was talking about this as, you know, reminding everyone we live in dangerous times, which I thought was quite a remarkable thing for him to say.
Well, I think they have a tremendous amount of threats, unfortunately. You know, the threats against the Vice President Harris, there's threats against former President Trump. Obviously, there's constant threats against the sitting president. You may remember in January of 2020, there was a hit, a U.S. military strike on General Soleimani from Iran. Iran issued a fatwa, which is a war declaration, I guess, or an assassination declaration against President Trump 4 years ago. And so the Secret Service is well aware of that and really does try to keep a secure perimeter around the president. So I would say what happened in Butler, PA was a lot more damaging. There was a sniper that really did have a clear shot to former President Trump. Thank God he missed. This was more in line with what happens with the Secret Service, where they disrupt something before it becomes dangerous to the president or dangerous to the subject that they're protecting.
Now, do you believe this second threat will impact the polls in Donald Trump's favor?
I'm not sure because, you know, the debate, obviously President Trump lost that debate. Any clear-eyed person could see that. You know, if you're for him, maybe people say that he won the debate if he was just chewing gum the whole time. But he lost that debate. It didn't move the polls for Vice President Harris. The attempt on his life the first time, which was terrible, did affect the polls briefly, but then the polls sort of came back to where they were. It doesn't seem like a lot of things are affecting the polls right now, although I would suspect sometime mid to late October, we will see a separation in the polls. We'll start to see some distance between these candidates.
Now, you were in the spin room when Donald Trump emerged from that debate. He immediately claimed he'd won the debate in spite of the evidence, I suppose, that was there for everybody, even those people from Fox News. The evidence was there that Donald Trump had not performed well.
Yeah. Well, that's him. I mean, you know, I mean, you'd have to expect him to do that. If you had said to me, you know, he tripped over, banged his head, was unconscious for, you know, 89 of the 90 minutes, he got up in the last minute, he would say that he won the debate. So that's him. That's how he operates. Truth be told, a lot of people around him like that about him. But that's something that came from his mentor, Roy Cohn. Roy was adamant with him that you show no weakness. You never admit defeat. Of course, he lost the election in 2020 and made the mistake of admitting that to Lex Fridman. He says it was sarcastic, but if you listen to the tape, it doesn't sound sarcastic. He admits that he, quote unquote, lost by a whisker. But for the last 3.5 years, he's lied about the election. He's told an election lie to all of his supporters. And so it would make sense to tell a debate lie. If you're telling an election lie, of course, you would end up telling a debate lie as well.
Now, you've been talking on your podcast about Kamala Harris and the difficulties that she faces. on two particular issues: immigration, for which she was given responsibility in the Biden administration on the southern border, and the cost of living, which is still impacting the shopping basket of American families.
Yeah, I mean, there are answers for both of those, but she has to tighten up those answers. I've watched some of her interviews over the weekend, and she's well-spoken, but she's got to hit the issue of inflation. The U.S. inflation was caused by fiscal and monetary stimulus. You know, the government sent out direct subsidies to businesses and to citizens of the country. They also had the interest rates lowered to zero, which created trillions of dollars of liquidity. So if you put $6 trillion into the U.S. economy over a nine-month period of time, and at the same time the supply chain is broken, all that money in the economy, less goods and services, it's going to push up prices. That happened globally. And she needed to say things like, yes, we have inflation, but it's lower here than it is in other parts of the industrial world, and it is coming down. Steps were taken during their administration to bring it down. But she's got to get a little bit more sure-footed on the economy. The border, I don't think they're going to willingly admit the mistake that they made on the border, but they reversed a lot of the executive action that Donald Trump had in place, and it caused a very big run on the border. They did try to fix it. I mean, they did say, okay, we've got this wrong. No politician admits it that directly, but they did get it wrong. And they tried to fix it with a bill that was bipartisan. But, you know, Mr. Trump told them, at least on the side of the Republicans, don't sign that bill. I need to make this an issue for the campaign. So here's a guy that wants to campaign on a problem rather than fix the problem. So it's the highest level of cynicism that you can get in politics, where these people are more interested, Donald Trump's case, more interested in becoming the president and serving himself than actually serving the American people. That border deal would have been a great deal for the country.
Now, the problem for Kamala Harris is trying to get some sort of message across in a pithy way. You know, make America great again. It's very, very simple. We're not going back. That's a pretty simple message. But on the economy, what is the simple message that she can get across in one sentence that says where her policies will take the American people?
You know, it's a very good question. Unfortunately, I'm not an ad person. I don't think I can come up with a jingle on the fly. But for me, my knee-jerk reaction is to stay the course. I think that the Biden administration has put pillars of legislation into this economy that are working. The Inflation Reduction Act is a infrastructure deal as well. The bridges, roads, and tunnels are being repaired. That's lowering the cost of goods and services in the country. We are now finally reshoring manufacturing in the country. In the first year of their term, they got a reshoring of manufacturing deal done, a $250 billion deal done. And they're also now making microprocessors and building microprocessor foundries in the country. So all of these things are leading to higher middle-class wage growth. Yes, we have inflation. There's no question about it. It's all over the industrialized world because of what happened during COVID. So me, I would just say stay the course. We have a plan in place. It is working. Fed is about to cut rates probably on September the 18th. They'll cut at least 25, maybe even 50 basis points. It's a sign that the inflation is tame. Let's not go to something disruptive that wreaks havoc on the society or the world. Mr. Trump wants to pull us out of our alliances. He literally wants to wall off the country from the rest of the world. Condoleezza Rice just wrote a great piece in Foreign Affairs magazine about isolationism and the perils of isolationism if the United States goes in that direction. So me, I would just say stay the course. Things are getting better. Let's not do something overly disruptive.
Now, you've also said that she needs to get out there and do more interviews, you know, whether they're softball interviews or whether they're hard-nosed interviews. Just the repetition, the number of reps of delivering her message that she gets to practice on, the better that message will become.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't know if she's going to come on your show, Pat Kenny, but we can try. You know, maybe we could ask her, but she's got to get out there more. She's only done two or three interviews. One was for CNN. I think some of them were for local news in Pennsylvania. But But I would just recommend that. Take some tough questions. Get out there. You've got a good record. Do you have a perfect record? No, but who has a perfect record? Certainly, Mr. Trump did not have a perfect record while he was president for the 4 years that he was there. So let's get out there. I think she did an amazing job at the debate of comparing and contrasting herself to who President Trump is and what he's become and where he would take the country versus what her vision is. And so I think she did a great job there. I think that's one of the reasons why she wants to have another debate. I predict Donald Trump will debate her despite the rhetoric otherwise. He's not going to be able to resist a mid-October debate where there could be as much as 100 million Americans watching that debate. So we'll see, but she should get out there more. She did a great job in the debate, but the American people, when you poll the American people, there's a good portion of the country that doesn't know her super well. And of course, we have to help them get to know her better.
Now, the question of whether or not to go on a debate on Fox with the hosts handpicked effectively by Donald Trump, and you've suggested, you know, it may be awkward, but she's got to do it to reach those very people who don't know her, don't know anything about her.
Yeah, I would certainly recommend that she does it because it will help her and the hosts that they're talking about. Two of those hosts I know personally, they're not the strident ideologues that you find in the Fox News commentary, the evening programming. These are more of the news-oriented hosts. They've done other debates before. Republicans and Democrats have accepted them. So hopefully she'll be willing to do that.
Now, the vulnerabilities that Donald Trump may have going forward, Pete Buttigieg on Fox actually said that he believes all the eating of cats and dogs and pets in Springfield, Ohio, is a distraction which is welcomed by Trump because at least they're not talking about his track record.
Well, I listen, he's probably the most clever Democratic politician of his generation, maybe of the last 30 years. He's incredibly smart on his feet. I think there's some truth to what Secretary Buttigieg is saying, but I think it's more anti-immigration. I think it's fear. Mr. Trump is running on fear and division. And so there are three legs to Mr. Trump's stool to win the election. One is misogyny. The other is racism. And then the third is anti-immigration, this sort of nativism that these people don't belong here. They're going to take your jobs and we need to deport them. And so this is the type of behavior that I've denounced. This is also, to me, classically un-American. To really understand the cycle of American success since the origination of America, it included lots of different people. It's what Lincoln said about America, it being the last best hope for mankind, that we were open to all different types of people. Mr. Trump is saying the very opposite. So I find it ironic because when you study the people that are supporting them, they come from many different sects. They come from many different ethnic backgrounds. But for some reason, they've now decided that the new ethnic background is unsavory to them. So it's a repulsive thing. It's laden with racism. It's laden with disunity. And people have to speak out about it, frankly. So I'm happy to be doing that.
The irony of all of this is that Donald Trump, two of his three wives were migrants from Eastern Europe.
Well, yeah, well, that's it. I mean, you know, you could go through every aspect of Mr. Trump's personality and we could tick off all the different things that are ironic. I mean, it's terrible, you know, I mean, including, you know, look, his family also had to arrive here at some point and his family had to be part of this immigration story, if you will.
Yeah. You mentioned misogyny on your recent podcast, you were talking about America still being a misogynist country. It's not alone in the world in that regard, but there are many Americans who would support Donald Trump, many of them women who would not really see the role of president as a job for a woman.
Yeah. So, I mean, you could call it sexism. You could call it misogyny. You could call it women aren't up to the job, and men are better at the job. All of these tropes, you could talk about. But I think we know, as we've evolved as a society, as we've evolved as people, I think we know that what our sex organs are or the color of our skin really doesn't matter. I mean, what really matters is the content of our character and our intelligence and our ability to analyze situations, make good decisions, build a consensus. With Donald Trump, you get a team of one. He's a narcissist to the point where he won't take input from other people. He'll literally do, as H.R. McMaster points out in his new book, he'll literally do the opposite of what you're telling him to do just to test and prove to everybody that he can do it on his own. And so the presidency is not a job for somebody like that. The presidency is a job for a consensus building person, someone willing to take input from others. Ronald Reagan had a great line that he put in a plaque and he put it on the desk in the Oval Office on his desk. It said, you can get anywhere you want in life as long as you don't care who gets the credit. He was a very successful president, understanding the idea of sharing credit. Mr. Trump is a team of one. Only one person on the team can get any credit. Any person that tries to get credit or he assumes tries to get credit, he'll laser or fire. It's not the right personality to be the president. So whether it's a man or a woman, when you compare and contrast the personalities, the styles, the decision making, the long successful political career that Vice President Harris has had in the country, I do think a majority of the American people will side with her. And not just on the popular vote, but I think a majority of the American people in the swing states that she needs to win will side with her. But we've got racism and sexism, and you're right. That's not just here in the United States, but it's better. It's better than it was 30 years ago. It's better, certainly better than it was 60 years ago. And hopefully she can break through. And like Margaret Thatcher did in the United Kingdom, and others have done around the world, women leaders have proven their mettle and proven their capabilities. I'm hoping that she can do that here come election day in the United States.
Now, Anthony, the possibilities for Donald Trump, one, that he wins comfortably and there can be no argument. What happens then with Project 2025 and all of that, we could talk about. But he wins, he gets back to the White House. Two, he loses and he protests and maybe orchestrates another rebellion against the result if he loses narrowly. Thirdly, he loses so emphatically and he faces the music on criminal and civil trials and perhaps even goes to jail. What is most likely?
Well, I think most likely is a narrow loss. I think he loses. I think eventually people will sour on this stuff and get exhausted from the nonsense that he's professing. I don't see him going to jail. I could be wrong about that, but I don't think in the United States, despite his malevolence and despite criminal intent in a lot of different ways that he's been indicted for, I don't think the United States is ready to put a former president into jail. Could he pay a penalty? Could he have some probationary period of time or something like that? Possibly, but I don't see him going to jail. Now, if you tell me he loses the election, and then he foments again another insurrection, I do think he will go to jail. I think he's got a November 26th sentencing in New York. And I think what happens between November the 8th and November the 26th will be very telling. If he's out there telling his followers that they need to foment a civil war in the country or to once again descend upon the Capitol and create violence, I do think he would end up going to jail for something like that. And I think that he doesn't want to go to jail. And I think that they've been very smart to move his sentencing date to after the election. And I think that they're trying to signal to him, play nice, play the game fairly. If you win, obviously these cases are going to go away. If he loses, I don't think he goes to jail, but I don't think they want him to try another insurrection. They'll be ready for him, of course. It's a disgusting thing that he perpetrated. And, you know, and again, if you don't mind me saying this on your show, Pat, I find it reprehensible that there's leadership in the Republican Party that allowed this stuff to happen. But because of their moral cowardice and their lack of principles, they didn't remove Donald Trump from our political discourse. You had people like Kevin McCarthy and Mitch McConnell, who are Republicans on his team, They could have worked with the Democrats after the January 6th insurrection, had him impeached in the House, convicted in the Senate. And of course, he wouldn't be able to serve. He would be disqualified from running again. So I think this is a sordid tale. In 50 years from now, political historians are going to be looking back on this and saying, how did that group of people allow this to happen? So hopefully we can beat him at the ballot box, but he should have been long gone from our nation's political discourse.
Now, international affairs don't really figure that strongly in American elections, although perhaps Gaza might be the exception this time round. But Putin and his admiration for Putin, and again, Viktor Orban, whom he quoted after the debate. One of the most shameful things of his presidency that I can recall was the press conference in Helsinki, where he dissed his own intelligence and security services in favor of Vladimir Putin. It was quite extraordinary. I'd never seen an American president do such a thing. What is that, the nature of that relationship with Putin?
Well, listen, you know, none of us could understand it. H.R. McMaster writes about it in the book. He doesn't understand the obsequiousness, the flattering. But what you saw, if you go back and watch that press conference with President Trump and President Putin, you saw a coward. You saw what happens when bullies are facing other bullies that they think are more intimidating than themselves, you know. And I found that another sign of Mr. Trump's moral weakness. He knows, because he's been briefed by our intelligence community and also the Five Eyes by, you know, New Zealand, Australia, Canada, the UK, all the different intelligence communities, what President Putin is doing around the world and how he's hurting the West and disrupting our democracies and creating lots of tribalism, or helping at least to create a lot of tribalism in our countries. And he needs to be denounced. He needs to be put back. Also, this aggression, this unilateral aggression in the Ukraine, if you're a believer in freedom, and the United States has stood for a beacon of freedom, certainly for 250 years, but more specifically since the end of the Second World War, we've maintained this mantle of leadership. Is it perfect? No. Has the United States made mistakes around the world? We certainly have. But by and large, we've been a force for good and a force for freedom. And we need to reject people like Vladimir Putin. And I'll remind your viewers of something that they should think about and frankly worry about. We have 5.7 billion people, 5.7 billion of our fellow travelers here on Earth are living under the yoke of autocracy and dictatorship somewhere around the world. And so it's important for all of us who believe in freedom, democratic principles, the idea of each of us being able to express our lives the way we've been endowed from God is super important. And we need to band together and have very, very strong alliances to protect each other. This is something that Mr. Trump doesn't understand. He's been very candid about this. He told John Bolton he wants out of NATO. He told John Kelly he wants out of NATO. These are things that would serve Vladimir Putin. So we don't understand why he's doing that. Some suggest things that are very illicit. I don't know. So I'm not going to I'm not going to suggest those on your show.
Remember that conversation,
but it's bad, you know?
The conversation between himself and Vladimir Putin and Sergei Lavrov. They were the only people in the room. No other representative of the United States was present, and no one will ever know what actually was said between Putin and Trump at that meeting. And the conspiracy theorists would say, this is the Manchurian candidate we have in Donald Trump.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, and again, I don't want to take the bridge too far, because I think in my advocacy for somebody like Vice President Harris, I want to come with facts that I know. I want to come with where I think his vision of America is going versus her vision. And I want to come with my firsthand evidence of what I saw during my time in the White House. But also remember, I was fired after 11 days. I was fighting with him inside the White House, which obviously got me fired. And frankly, I deserved to be fired because I disagreed with what he was doing. But my friends that worked alongside of me, the eyewitness accounts of what we saw, that's the stuff I want to focus on, because I don't know what was said during the Putin meetings. I don't know why he will never denounce anything that Russia is doing on the world stage, even though we know what they're doing is aggressive and we know what they're doing is a threat to all of us. And I'll leave you with this. It's a rhetorical, but I'll leave you with this. For 74 years, Finland and Sweden were not in NATO. 74 years. NATO celebrates its 75th anniversary this past summer. Finland and Sweden entered NATO. So what does that tell you? Those are countries bordering Russia, same way the Ukraine is bordering Russia. And they're entering NATO because they fear Vladimir Putin and they fear the aggression and the expansionist nature of the current Russian government. So you don't have to, I mean, there's very smart people in Finland and Sweden. You don't have to go by me, Pat Kenny. Think about what they're doing and think about why they're doing it. And also think about the threat and us here in the United States that understand that we should work very hard for Vice President Harris.
The last thing is really, are you convinced of his sanity? I mean, is what we see some sort of delusional madness, or is it all?
It's not. I mean, Pat, he's completely certifiably crazy. I mean, he's got deep-rooted mental illness. I mean, by the way, you don't have to be a psychiatrist to know that Donald Trump is mentally ill. Like, if someone breaks their leg on a ski slope and the bone is sticking out of the skin, and I say, "Hey, that's a broken leg," I don't have to be an orthopedic to know that the leg is broken. I mean, the guy's nuts. I mean. And the truth is, we're in a culture war, and there's a cult-like aura around him, and so he's intoxicated a group of people. And there's always been some level of nativism and racial hatred in this country. There always has been. The question is, it's never been the majority. You know, Mr. Trump has never been able to get above 47.5% of the voters in any time. You know, when you look at his approval ratings or polling or actual voting data. And so hopefully we can suppress this and hopefully we can work towards reducing this to the extent that we can. But no, he's certifiably crazy. But you know that, Pat. Your viewers know that. Even the ones that are supporting him, that are throwing socks at the television right now, they know he's nuts. But maybe for some reason they've decided to support him.
Anthony Scaramucci, former director of communications at the Trump White House for 11 days, as you heard, and co-host, along with Katty Kay, of The Rest is Politics US. Anthony Scaramucci, thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Great to be on. Thank you, sir.
And new episodes of The Rest is Politics US edition drop every Friday. You can find them on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.